Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you again for your invitation to come and join with you. I need to say first up that even though I work with Dayspring, today is not from Dayspring. Today is a very personal story, and the invitation was to talk about my spiritual journey, and I need to distance my journey from that of Dayspring. It's one of those disclaimers that you hear, the comments made herein have nothing to do with those with whom I work. Part of that is a reflection on Dayspring itself, in that we do try to operate as a group who encourages individual spiritual journeys. So however your journey happens to be, I think we endeavour to offer programs or resources that will in fact help you on your way. So there's that sense of individuality anyway that goes with each of us having our own spiritual journey, our own personal journey that is worthy, that is to be loved and acknowledged and shared. So that really is sort of the place that I come from personally as well. Let's get my notes going. I appreciate Luke's comments. I take his words about your journey is one that you really understand in hindsight, and that you can make a lot more sense of, I think, as you look back. And I have to say, there's a great deal of my journey that is true about as well. I've had a very rich journey, very, very rich journey, something that I'm incredibly grateful for, grateful to others, but particularly grateful to God, in that God has journeyed and put up with me, as it were, through the very various ways in which my life has unfolded. For me, the sense of journey is more about movement and openness to what may be, to whatever may be ahead. It was fairly early in my spiritual life that I changed quite distinctly, quite determinedly. Changed from the sense of journey being a mapped journey with a fixed goal. That would probably have been part of my early teaching, early understanding. God has a pathway for you, and that it's my job in life to discern God's pathway, and that if I do that, then I will get to the end that God has for me and we'll greet and meet and everything will be fine. I think I moved away from that fairly early on, not wanting to go into that, but with this greater sense that journeying is about movement. Now, as Luke noted, that movement can be on different levels. And for me, it was both physical and spiritual, and certainly emotional as well, that sense of movement. So to take that sense of looking back from where you are now, I guess there's about four or five particular places that I find myself now that I'd like to speak from, with the reflection of where they've come from in my journey. Rather than bore you with my biography and what I've done and haven't done, I think it's actually more useful, and it's easier in my sense of being. I think part of my spiritual journey certainly has been about ownership, owning my own journey, actually being courageous enough to say, this is how I want to be, this is how I'm being called to be, and that's okay. I think because of my own family of origin, as most of us have remnants of whatever it is that we grew up with, I think that I've lived my early life quite subject to other people's opinions, quite subject to other people's manipulation, or in the positive side, care and desire for me to do the best, have the best, go the best in my life, But the outcome of that was a sense of having to agree with, having to obey, having to journey with what was deemed to be right by others. And that's been quite a dominant force for me in my life, including my spiritual and my faith journey. And that sense of the not, again with hindsight, I have to say, not actually owning my own journey, but rather being subject to and listening to and obeying or agreeing with others is certainly a very dominant thread that, fortunately, by the time you get grey hair, you have a little bit more ability and courage to actually stake your own place. Now, that's my journey. I pray that you have a greater sense of that in your own lives than I have had, but it has certainly been quite significant for me. So at the moment, at my age, 60 plus, I have to say, with grey hair to show for it, there's several things now that I think are really the way I want to live now. And I'm talking about my spiritual journey. But another part of where I am now, and part of that, what I'm talking about, agreeing with others and being what's called having a really external sense of what's right for me rather than an internal sense of what's right for me. Part of that is actually being able to say now that where I'm at now with how I feel about faith and God is okay, that I'm happy to own that and to put it out there. Probably the most significant thing in my spiritual journey at this moment has been about the last 15 years or so, I think, where I've really moved into a new style of spirituality for me, and that style of spirituality is called contemplative. I don't now follow the contemplative model, which is monastic, or which withdraws from society or withdraws from life. I don't uphold that, but I'm very, very convinced. And I'm convinced in the sight of God that God is very present in the now of life. As I live life in every particular moment, that God is present and God is supportive and God is with me. If that is not the case, then God is not. That's where I've got to. If God is not with me here and now in everything that I experience and do, then God is not. I'm just imagining something. I have a belief system, I make it up, I'm excited about something, I'm emotional about something, but it may not be God. So I'm really, my contemplative sense is very much about God being present to me at this moment, whatever I'm doing. And a part of that, in the contemplative aspect of it, is to be able to be still enough to be able to be present to God. So inner stillness and being quiet within has become a very significant part of my ability to hear God, to love God, to be with God, to know God in my inmost being. Now, that's not always been the case. As I say, it's been 15 years or so. Being aware of the styles of faith expression has been important. And I've moved through several styles. I began as an Anglican and loved it. I grew up in a church and had the experience of a family that didn't go to church, but was in those times adamant that every child went to Sunday school, so I did, and loved it. And ended up being the youngest in a family of three children. The only one that wanted to get confirmed. The rule in our house was that once you got confirmed, you made up your own mind about what you did. So my two siblings didn't continue with their particular faith journey at that time. For me, it was just a delight. It was an absolute calling, and my sense of being in the church in that confirmation process is still a highlight of my spiritual life. And in that, a sense that God was there with me all the time, that God somehow in my very immature sense of God and understanding. God was very present. To the point where I then continued after being confirmed, getting up, the only one in my household, on Sunday morning and riding my bike to church to have Holy Communion at 8 o'clock and then to come back home afterwards and do whatever the family did for the rest of the time. Nobody stopped me, nobody ridiculed me. It was like it was just didn't happen, it was a non-event. But for me it was very significant. And I think there are probably sociological reasons around that as well, in terms of being loved in the church, or perhaps a sense of God. And the communion particularly was very important to me at that time. And so the sense of what that connection and that sense of love meant was probably part of the sociological reasons for it as well. But I remember it in my spiritual journey as God loved me. I loved God, God wanted me. And I was very connected through that. So I began in that liturgical style, the Anglican prayer book, still quite significant to me internally. I then moved out in my teenage years and became involved with ICF, which became Scripture Union, and the evangelical movement within schools, and then went to university, became very involved in the Evangelical Union, did the beach missions, did the camps, all of that. I think I see a few heads nodding here. We sort of all did that evangelical route. So I stayed in that evangelical context, as I say, until about the last 15 years. And for each of those parts, I think one thing about looking back on my spiritual journey is not to have any sense of loss or any sense of regret in any parts of that journeying. There are things I wish didn't happen. There are things that I think now and I see now in my relationship with God which feels so much better. But it doesn't mean that back then it wasn't great as well. It's that, to me, is the movement. That is the sense of this is the one God that we love and experience. Whether we're 5 or whether we're 50, it's the same God. And in the same moments, however immature my relationship with God might be, it is still the same relationship with God. It's not different. God is the same. Either we have that as a mantra in our faith, yesterday, today, forever, God is the same. So how God has dealt with me has been the same, but his grace has allowed me to move and to move in relationship to God differently. So I value that. I value all the parts that I have learnt the faith. I learned a huge amount of my early faith, I learned a huge amount of my evangelical faith, but I've learned something different again, and in all of those I hold them as a single movement, as it were, and I don't have regrets not to do with my relationship with God. I do have regrets to do with people, but that's a different story. The movement into the contemplative for me began with some of my life events that occurred and that were difficult, and that is a common story as well. We often change styles of spirituality according to life events, and I think that's another ownership, another mantra for me now is not only is God very present in what I'm doing at this very moment now, God isn't out there sometime and will reward me sometime in the future if I've been good. God is here now, and how God walks with me is important. So another part of that was the fact that it's often life events that shape our spiritual journey. And that was true for me. Life events actually have shaped my spiritual journey. That's not contradictory to saying God is the same, regardless, and my relationship with God is the same, but it's about me. And it's about what my needs and where God was, this same God, to come and to meet the needs that I had according to how my journey changed. And life changed as well. Probably the beginning of that, I married an engineer, and he's in construction work, and we moved quite regularly with his projects, and I was a very supportive wife, so we carted the children all around the world, He married late, well, late, 28. Seemed late then. I don't know that it's late now. But we married, and then the next day we left for Saudi Arabia, and we had 5 years living in Saudi Arabia, and the first child was born there. And I taught there as well in the Middle East. We then came back to Australia, did a lot of moving to different places here in South Australia, up north, back again, bit of a yo-yo, depending upon the projects, every 2 or 3 years. And then seemed to be settled down in Perth a little bit, and he had an offer to go to Bangkok, to Thailand, to work. And the question was, would I go and take the children once again? I think this is my 8th house pack unpacked, and I was a bit weary by then. And so that actually fired up quite a significant movement for me spiritually, because I needed to think very carefully about what was my life and what was my belief about and my commitment about, and what was actually my husband's life and his commitment and his belief. So it wasn't about our marriage in any sense at all, but very much about could I go again through this moving, this packing. And of course by this stage our children are in high school, so relocation was just huge, to especially to a non-English speaking country and so on. It meant international schools. That caused a great deal of internal turmoil for me. And I think that was, I note that as the beginning of my contemplative journey, because I had to still within myself all of that noise around angst of moving, anxiety of going somewhere, not being able to work. I had actually just finished refreshing my teaching qualifications that I'd let go for the time we had children. And so I'd just been offered a full-time job in a school when my husband said, we need to go to Bangkok. So there's a lot of things going on. And this is my point about life. These life events actually marry together in the sense of your spirit and how your spiritual quietude, your spiritual settledness. I think it's what Paul talks about when he says, in all things I've learnt to be content. In Philippians, I think that's what it's about. So this quietness within became a way in which, for me, I could make a decision that said, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. I can see the benefits here, or I can see the benefits there. Now let me see where I'm at peace. And that became really, I learnt later, I didn't know it at the time, but I learnt later, was what I was looking for in terms of being more contemplative about where is God in the midst of my life. This is my life. If I can find inner stillness and just reflect on all the options, all the possibilities, then I can hear God's leading. Now, it's not leading in the terms of he's going to tell me I should go to Thailand. It's leading in terms of giving me courage, giving me endurance, giving me internal support to be gracious, to be loving, to be open wherever I go. And that was a huge learning for me. Very, very significant. So from this point of view then, I think now I claim a fairly contemporary sense of being contemplative, that to approach life in a more settled, a more calm way, where I know the Spirit of God will speak if I quieten the noise. And the noise is often anxiety, in my case. It's anxiety that is the noise. The what-ifs, what's going to happen. About 10 years ago, my contemplative journey had begun to form itself into a more regular practice, and that was at the beginning of my association with Dayspring. And at that time, I was joining with Brian Stitt, who founded Dayspring, once a month for a quiet day, where we took time out to just be very still, and to be to attend to our own relationship with God, not to spend the whole time rushing around and doing for God, but to just be with God and be still. And I'd done that for about 2 years when we had a family tragedy. And again, it's these life events that really shape the spiritual journey. And my sense that God is in life is very much the fruit of these tragedies that occur in life. In 2001, our younger son was involved in a car accident and was severely brain damaged. At the time, I was... When we came back from Thailand, I actually decided that, or felt that, it was right for me to look at ordination of some sort or to look at ministry in full time. I'd actually finished my theological degrees very early in my life. I did science at university as a biologist, and then within 2 years I wanted to do my theological degree. So I finished theology and did my BD through Melbourne College of Divinity very early in life. So I had this great sense of calling to something, but I really felt that as a family, and supporting Jeremy in what he did. That was my sense of calling and ministry in that sense. When we came back from Thailand, I actually thought that there was more to this that I should be answering. My children were older. The time for mothering was coming down. And it was just more a sense of, where is God leading me? So I went to the Baptist College and I did ministry training, refreshed my theological studies and did my grad lib in ministry through the Baptist College to then go into pastoral work. I'd been in pastoral work for about 2 years when our son's accident happened. And it was one of those terrible 1 a.m. calls that happen, and we had to go down to the hospital, and he was on life support there for 2 or 3 weeks and in a coma, and has been left with brain damage as a result of that. At the time, it was one of those, don't expect anything to happen out of this other than he'll be in a nursing home as a vegetable. It was that sort of story. So it was quite a shock for me at the time, being in pastoral work and having a very strong sense of faith, and my gifting, I felt, was about teaching. I'd been a teacher for all the years we'd travelled. I'd taught in the Middle East, I'd taught in Bangkok, taught in Sydney and various places. So I really had a strong sense of gifting in teaching. But at this time, when I was in the church, and I was teaching women's groups in Bible study and exegesis and so on, very, very passionate about that. There was also some political stuff going on within the church at the same time. And it all volcanoed together, one can say. It all came together at the one time. The end result was that within about 3 or 4, 6 weeks, probably, I think it was about 6 weeks, I was called into the pastoral team and by the young minister in the church, and basically told that I was trying to split the church because the church was so supportive and caring about our family and what was happening, and he was interpreting that as his ministry was under threat and that I was actually using Chris's accident to split the church. Now, that was fairly devastating considering he was still in a coma in the hospital, and the outcome of it was visitation by the hierarchy of the church to say, whilst we don't tell you that you can't go back to the church, it would be better if you didn't. So we were left then, 8 weeks after this devastating accident, with Chris and Shenton Park, basically a vegetable, and no community to support us. All these people that we had journeyed with for, we'd been part of the church plant 10 years, all of these people were not there. Not because they didn't want to, but because of this hierarchical imprimatur that said, if you've been a leader in the church, then you don't go back. And it's not good for the church to have any further communication. So we were all left by this one sort of hierarchical thing in this Never Never Land. I tell you that story because it's so shaped now, my spiritual journey. It's so shaped it, and I love it now. Where I am now is just brilliant. Why? Because up to that time, it was very much in an evangelical style. It was very much about teaching, very much about the mission of the church, very much about going out, helping others to come to know Christ. I support that. I think that that is incredibly essential to the Christian faith continuing. How will our faith continue if we don't have mission and outreach? But for me personally, on the inside, when that was stripped away from me, there was a huge void. I'd sit often, either beside my son or at night, and there was just a void. There was no comfort. There were no companions. There were no people on the journey with me. It was just empty. And that went on just for a few weeks, until one night I was just by myself. I couldn't understand why it was that I didn't want to go and read the Bible. I couldn't understand why I didn't want to pray. I couldn't understand why I didn't feel anything. I was absolutely numb. And then one day I thought, darn, I've got to get back to this. I've got to get back to my faith. And so I sat outside one day quietly on my own with the scripture on my knee and opened the Psalms, which is always the place I think to go for emotion, because it comes out of the emotional journey of people with God as the Psalms, and it's just beautiful. And did the flick, you know. There must be something in here that can help me. Gotta be. I haven't spent these last 40 years, 50 years being a God lover, and now get to this point where this void is all there is. And one of those stories, I hate to be so ordinary, but just my eyes lit upon Psalm 66. And verse 5 in Psalm 66 just said, "Come and see what the Lord has done. His work amongst his mortals is awesome." Now, my son at that stage was still not able to do anything. He was completely paralysed, not able to see anything, just classical staring vegetable. And so for me to read that was just so amazing. Come and see what the Lord has done. It's not will do. It's not hang in there, girl, because everything's going to be fine. It was this sense of come and see what the Lord has done. And it challenged my faith. It was really something about it, that very strong internal voice that said to me, all of that out there is nothing. What you do is just stay in here and know that God is. Know that God is there with you. And that became really that whole turning point for me of the importance of being quiet, being inward, and being able to just be with God whilst life moves, while events move, while everything else happens. We can do whatever we need to do in the context of life. If in here we hold that strong, confident, sound sense that God is and God is with you. Chris actually, it's now nearly 10 years since he's had his accident. One of the great miracles in my life has been what's happened to Chris. And gradually he spent a year at Shenton Park learning everything again. And by the time he came out of there, he was able to eat and breathe on his own, and he could say a few things. Just this past week, actually it was yesterday, but in the last month or so, we've moved Chris into his own unit. He's in a wheelchair, but he's able to look after himself. He has carer support, but he's actually can pretty well with carer support live an independent life. He is brain damaged, but we're incredibly, incredibly thankful that the journey of faith has included what God has done within Chris's own being and within Chris's self. Chris was a very faithful young man. He was part of the church that I was in. Sometimes he has more faith than me. I think that he's just so much, in a sense, childlike in his faith, I suppose you'd say. But that inner quietness I can recognise in him as, again, that this just is. God just is. And God is just with me. And there are huge numbers of stories all around that experience for us. So that was my journey into the contemplative. I've found that that's the place I prefer to be now. I'm very disappointed that my evangelical understandings fell away at that time, and I don't quite understand that yet. I'm quite clear now that whilst we need to learn with our head and our intellect, that we, the evangelical and probably a lot of the other styles of spirituality, have lost or omit what's underneath in terms of our experience or our emotions or our feelings. And life is one. We are not just a head with an intellect and beliefs. God actually tends to the emotion. God actually holds us in the experiences that we're going through. And I think at the moment, I'm not there yet. I will be by the time I die, but I'm not there yet. But I think at the moment, it's a reflection on where I was, that I had invested so much energy into teaching intellectual, belief-orientated spirituality. And I personally had not allowed myself to incorporate and to hold my experience and my emotional life as part of my spiritual journey. I think that's probably where I'm at with that. So being contemplative is a very long-winded first point. The other points I think that I am at now very much so probably all relate to that. That experience in my life is quite iconic. It shaped me a great deal. It left me with a lot of bitterness for quite a while, and that's another part of having to quieten within, that the bitterness can be another form of noise that separates us from God and our relationship. And so learning to quiet that and to leave people as they are in their faith, and what was important for them, is where I have to simply sit now. The other ones now that I really want to own in terms of my own spirituality is my feminine spirituality. I recognise now, out of that experience with the church, that the greater agenda for the church at the time of our son's accident was the male leadership role. That was more important. And that the church could not be disrupted. You couldn't have division, and you certainly couldn't have division that threatened that male leadership. Now again, I have to be honest and say I was very bitter about that bit. But I'm not now, because I see it again. Not, I think I was cross then because I didn't have an alternative. Now I can see that a lot more clearly, that there is a feminine spirituality, and that we as women do engage differently with our faith, and that that's okay. We don't have to engage with faith the way a masculine preferred faith is. Now this is not about men and women. It's about the different styles of faith. And for men, they have a feminine spirituality, and for women, we have a masculine spirituality. But for me, they were very mismatched. And I found how to balance the way that I experience God as a woman, and that's become a huge ownership issue for me. I'm not a feminist. I hate that word because it's got political connotations and the avant-garde and the go out there. It's more about being who I am, and that's a woman with a feminine spirit. And try to learn what that means as part of my journey now. Another point that I've been now for the last 10 years is, I think I call it post-denominational. Again, my experience with the church really rocked my faith in communities and church communities, and I found that small communities are where I love to be. I'm very anti the big noisy ones, dare I say. So I'm very comfortable here. I have to say, one reason why I would accept an invitation to tell this story is because I see this as a small community of people who have a very like-minded, equal sense of sharing the journey together, and that would be very much where I would be at the moment as well. So I think I'm post-denominational, largely because something I've said for a long time was that God graces all people as God wills. Now I said that the first time just as a little thing, and then it started to sink in. That's quite an amazing thing to say, because I have to let go of so much in order to say that. For me to say God will grace other people as God wills means I have to actually free God. I have to let God go. And I find that with denominationalism, the bounding of communities by beliefs, by agreed behaviours, by liturgies, by however it is, that certainly also bounds God. And I think a lot about the Easter story of the curtain in the temple being torn in two, and the story that in fact it was about letting God out, not about keeping God in. And I sense that, you know, in the ancient times in the Hebrews, God was in the Holy of Holies, and that only a few had the privilege of being in touch with God. And to have that curtain rent actually symbolises very much in my life something about letting God out to be free, to grace people as God wills and as people desire. Now that's challenged me. It challenges me, and it has brought me to a place of ecumenism. I think it's bringing me to a place of quite profound interfaith situation, but I'm still not quite sure about that, because that's quite a complex thing. I think we can be naive about saying we care for and respect other people's faiths. But in principle, if I believe in one God, I believe in God loving his creation, then he loves all his people. And I don't have the right to say how he will love them. Now that's been quite profound for me. Another part of my story now is around creation spirituality. Again, I think this has come with my contemplative journey in the last 10 years or so, and it's very much expressed in the fact that we run a retreat house in the hills now, and my belief around that is very much along the lines that God does grace people who take time to be still and to quieten the extraneous noise of whatever life is for them and actually be open. And I like the work of John O'Donohue and his book Beauty, when he talks about beauty, God as beauty. And I have a similar feeling about God as peace. Paul's writings, all of his writings, he opens with the grace and peace of our Lord Jesus Christ. For grace and peace are these two great icons of our faith. So I have a strong sense now that if we can invite people into God's creation, into the bush, into a quiet setting somewhere that allows them to feel embraced by creation, that the beauty of creation and the peacefulness of that experience are in fact the engaging of God. Now again, I'm not quite there with that idea, but I see it work. I see a lot of people coming to Nathaniel's Rest and just taking time to be still, whether they have a God language or they don't, whether they have a faith language or they don't. They are able to be still and experience an inner peace, and I am quite happy to say God is at work. I began, my science degree, as I said, was in biology, so I began very early on with a great love of nature and the natural world. I spent a lot of my youth with a butterfly net in hand, catching the white butterflies in Dad's veggie garden, and having jars of these white butterflies stored on Mum's kitchen shelf, much to her grace and delight. And my father was a beekeeper, so some of my early memories are actually going out with him. He had to go out a long way away to wherever the trees were flowering, and just living in the caravan with him in the middle of the forest, and just the delight. It's such a strong memory for me. So I have this sense that somewhere between that memory there and my current sense of Nathaniel's Rest and being in the hills, there's a blank. And somehow I lost my sense of I am creation. I am part of God's created, manifest love. And I think it's because I was so involved in my head and my intellectual work and my beliefs and the doing again that, and I think that's appropriate actually, I'm not saying it's a negative, it's appropriate for the time of my life, but I really love the fact that I'm older and slower and a little bit more, just older and slower really, to experience just sitting in the middle of God's creation is so connecting, and it's so enlivening, and it's so rejuvenating. And so to have that peace has been a huge part of a very, very wonderful part of this end of my journey. Another one that I own at the moment, which is a very undeveloped one, but I can see the value of, and I hope in my journey to work towards it, is this phrase that I learnt from Patricia Fox when we were at a conference last year. And I think it comes from John Zazoulis, who's quite a well-known Trinitarian theologian. It's about the openness of being. This lovely phrase, openness of being. And the first thing I think of is Jesus. The openness of being. And I think a lot now about what does it really mean to live a Christian life and to really be able to share my love of God and share whatever it is that I sense from God with others. How do I do that? And I think about this idea of openness of being. And when we were in Bangkok, we went to the Anglican Church in Bangkok, and the pastor there, or the minister there, had a great phrase that the most important thing for Christians to do is to love indiscriminately. To love indiscriminately. Now that to me is openness of being. It's about me being available and open to welcome the other wherever they are at, however they experience their life or their faith or their God. To have that sense of openness and not have what I think I've grown up with mostly is this internal fear. Fear that if I actually welcome you, if I actually reach out to you, somehow you're going to do something to me that I have to be guarded about. You know, to have this internal, it's this noise again, this internal noise. Fear is another one. And so an openness of being is about trying to live the Christian message as a welcome to the soul in the other. Parker Palmer's great words of the shy soul, how do we welcome the shy soul in the other person, and to let them know of God's love in their life and how God is with them. So I'm working on that one. That's a very new one for me. I came across a little book that is a book of Rumi's sayings. Rumi is a contemplative Islamic writer, and his book is called Just These Four Things, and then he talks about them, and I think they're wonderful. He says, eat lightly, breathe deeply, move freely, and gaze intently. Now I think that's what openness of being is. Gaze intently at the other. How do we welcome other people as Christians? How do we know? How do we show love? if we're not able to look at them and let them know that they are valued by us. Gaze intently. Because these days, with all our wonderfully sex-ridden society, everybody will jump up and down and say something about abuse or emotional abuse or something like that. Rubbish. It's garbage. Garbage. How do we welcome the soul in the other? That's my journey now. I'm not very good at that. But I intend to be. I intend to go on being that. The last thing I think in my journey that I've learnt really is about companioning. And it goes with the idea or the sense of fear and the sense of not being afraid that I'm not going to measure up to somebody else's expectations. And that the idea of companioning one another in our spiritual journey is really about overcoming the fear to share how we've experienced God. And to do it with that openness that I talked about. The journey for me in movement and openness is very much about validating my own experience of God and saying, this is my experience, it is God, I know that to be true, and that's all there needs to be said, that is my truth. And to have the confidence in my faith in God to then be able to share that and reveal that without fear. I do think fear to share our inner, intimate relationship with God holds a lot of us, or a lot of groups, probably more than individuals, shackled within these bounded spaces. And it also holds God. And I really think that now. I think that, and obviously in Dayspring that's my work now, is about companioning others to encourage and to validate. I love this word, validate. To actually validate that their experience of God and their faith in God is true. It's not got to be true according to. It's not going to be backed up by somebody else. It is true. Of course, a lot of the fears come from all the psychological boogies that we've been told about, or about being New Age, sort of way out experiences. I actually trust God a bit more than that. I actually trust God to know that God desires to be with his created people, and that when God strikes us, we know that. That's quite a strong feeling for me now. So they're my spiritual journey learnings at this end of my life. To be contemplative, to own my feminine spirituality, to be ecumenical and embrace all peoples as God graces them, to be very connected to who I am as a created being, as part of all of creation. Now, out of that, of course, also comes your love and respect of the environment. I don't think there's a better grounding for being an environmentalist than to acknowledge that you are part of the loved creation, and that in that loved space we care for creation as God cares for us. I think that's another one of the hierarchical, patriarchal rejections that I have done, is that I don't accept that we are to dominate, that we are to have dominion over. I think that we, in this era and in the place that we're in now, with our knowledge and understanding of God, we are to support and love and care for our creation. So that's also something I've come to. So the creation spirituality, my openness of being, and my sense that we need to walk alongside one another. We need to share with one another. We need to have the liberty from fear to be able to actually say, this is how I've experienced God. I'd like to share that with you, and have the other hold that with care and openness, and not defensively, but be able to say, God bless you. It's wonderful what God is doing in your life. So that's where I'm at this stage. My journey's been one of physically moving a lot, not in the last 10 years, which is great. I love it. And I'm not moving again, so that's good. of journeying through heartache and journeying through joys, always knowing God's presence, but now not always knowing what that means. I'm very happy with openness now. I'm very happy with paradox. I'm very happy not knowing. To have an unknown sense of God is okay with me, because again, that fits my sense of needing let God be who God is, not who I need him to be. To not control God. I think if I need to tell God how it is and control and make sure everyone else is doing what I think God ought to be doing with them, then I think I probably need to get a different God. So I'm in a stage now of quite very great peace, very great contentment, huge thankfulness, and just a great deal of unknownness. But that's okay. It'll all work itself out in the end with God's help. Thank you. Amen.